You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And we are slowly running out of content to talk about. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
And with us tonight is a very important person, a VIP, whereas I'm just a P.
Kapla! The Klingon has returned.
Oof. Oof, from the Imperial Empire, as Captain Picard called it. The Imperial Empire. I'm not sure exactly what that meant, but live from... Are you still on Kronos, or have you come
back? No, I'm not on Kronos. I'm sitting on the bridge of the USS Gorkon.
Oh, okay. Well, you know...
Oh, by the way, I'm not a colonel anymore now. I am a brigadier. I got... with the fleet captain.
Oh. Oh, wait. Where's that in comparison to, say, Admiral?
Next rank.
Oh, Admiral's the next rank?
Yep. That would be Commodore or Brigadier General.
Ah, well, you'll probably make a better Commodore than any Commodore Star Trek's ever seen.
Oh, no, I'll be a Brigadier General. I'm Fleet Marine.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's a darn good thing you didn't say. I won't say it. So, Brian, I'm going to take a look back while you tell us how you've been to see when you've been on last.
I was on last during your last Klingon. That was...
Rightful well, Heir.
Yeah, Kalis.
Yeah, a very, very long time ago. To say the least.
Well, wait till you get to DS9 next episode. You'll really be having me around all the time.
We haven't... You know something? I'll tell you. We are 1, 2, 3 regular and 1 finale away from ending this show. And honestly, James, I have not discussed it much at all. He kind of wants to, but actually I think he's on the fence.
I say we ought to bring the old show back, personally, Lou.
Well, you know, at this point, doing any kind of Star Trek review dedicated without James is a non-starter. I'm just not interested in unless he's with me. But I don't know, James. You know, we could talk later if you want, because I don't want you to have to worry about it.
No, how do you keep on bringing this up as if I'm not a Deep Space Nine fan or something?
Are you?
No, okay. There's no problem carrying on with DS9.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'm at the point where I'm thinking, if I can't keep this going right now faster than I have been, you know, how difficult will it be? So, Brian, I do see that you...
Lou!
There you go.
You realize there is a bunch of Star Trek going on that... We've really literally lost out on between from our last show to now. I mean, come on, we got Picard. We got two seasons of Picard. We have the Christopher Pike version of Star Trek. We have Discovery. We got Lower Decks. Not talking about the movie that they're bringing everyone back on to for the third move for the fourth movie. In the Abrams line, I mean, there's,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I mean, there's no reason why our esteemed colleague over on the across the pond there couldn't jump into the replacement of the android in our old show.
A couple reasons for that is this here, doing this with, you know, somebody in England is really tough because it limits us to time that we could do this that, you know, he is 6 hours ahead of me, and I think that would be too much, asking too much of him to try and juggle two shows with his busy life, you know, thousands of
miles
away.
What's the second show?
Well, if we did a DS9, and then I thought you were talking about getting a Lou Trek show, which is your general Star Trek discussion.
That's what I'm talking about. Instead of going to the DS9, let's just go straight to the...
Oh, no. We would... Him and I would continue doing our DS9 thing, whereas you and I should be... You're right. I've talked about this too much. We need to get back into the Lou Trek show. It just...
If Brian would crawl out of his grave right now, he'd be beating us over the head with the weapon I left him with in his grave.
Yeah. Yeah, he would. He absolutely
would. Okay. And you know it. We've been out of the saddle too long, bro.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, so let's jump back into our show. We're talking about... Oh, yeah. I need to find it. Remember where?
Now I can tell you our first guest.
You?
No, besides me. I'm talking about if we got the old show back.
Ah, Shelby.
Alex Peters. From the Axanar project.
Was it Alec? Okay,
one that took on Star Trek and almost beat him.
Oh, you know, I have not been following that, so what do you mean, almost beat him? He didn't?
Well, they came to a compromise.
Mm.
But he still has his production company, still running strong. He's got the old bridge up. He's getting ready to make, he's about ready to make new Star Trek. That's going to be longer than 15 minutes.
Okay, well, let's start thinking about everything that we have, that we've had since the last show number 213. Let's see, when did that come out? That's actually the lost one with Brian and Furbob, if I remember, and that was back on
17, 16.
Well, how can my WordPress blog not have a date? That is so weird. It doesn't have the date that it was recorded. Or podcast, or broadcast. Anyway, but it's been a very long time. You're right. I think I've got to stop. So anyway, here we go. So tonight, I think I said tonight. Did I say tonight's episode was Firstborn, everybody? If not,
yes.
That's what it is. So the synopsis.
That's the reason why I'm here. You always play me a Klingon.
Yes, we do. The synopsis for tonight's episode is, a mysterious family friend and advisor encourages Worf's son, I don't want to be a warrior, Alexander, to become, I don't want to be a warrior. This is the 21st episode of Season 7, first aired on April 25th, 1994. The teleplay by Rene Echeverria, story by Mark Kaltfeld, directed by Jonathan West. Lot on Memory Alpha about this one. Guest stars include James Sloan as Kemptar, or another name that he could also go by. Brian Bozall as Alexander Rozhenko. Gwyneth Walsh as Betoa. Barbara March, or is it Mark? M-A-R-C-H. I assume it's March.
It's March.
March as Lursa. Joel Swetow as Yogg. And Colin Mitchell as Gorta. And Armin Shimerman as Quark. Co-starring Michael Denick as Singer. Name or his profession? Oh, yeah. Singer. Yeah, that would make sense. There was a lot of singing. Anyway, John Kenthal Shaw as Molar, Ricky Deshaun Collins as Eric. So, as Eric, don't give him another name. What do we think of this episode? Klingon, you start.
Well, Firstborn is kind of going back. It's kind of like a time travel type deal. It's going back in the time to fix what he perceives as a wrong and to prevent his father from being killed, what he perceives as dishonorably. We'll go through as the episode goes on. It'll explain itself a little better. Mm-hmm. When Worf confronts the supposed aide or supposed important person coming back to get Alexander to become a warrior, which later on down the line in the books, he actually does become a warrior. He actually joins the military in DS9. He actually fights and survives through the whole Dominion War. And in the books, he's actually a damn good shot. He's almost near a sniper marksman.
Mm.
He's not good with hand weapons, so he can blast you from anywhere.
Yeah, that's something that I'm not sure they handled it right with Alexander on DS9, but we'll talk about that when DS9 comes.
Oh, I'll be waiting for that episode.
Of course you are. It's a given. Okay. Oh, anyway, continue with your brief synopsis. Go ahead.
So, what it comes down to is the end kind of explains itself and kind of explains it to Alexander, the older Alexander, I should say, on what he's done, what he did has modified time. He has changed his course of what he's done or what has happened by going back in time to try to get Alexander to be a warrior. You got to remember, his mom kind of instilled to him in the short time that she was around for him not to always follow the path of his father to be a warrior. He's more of an intellectual. He's like his mother. His mother was a very good warrior, but she tended to be the intellectual than the duke it out, brawl out type. And Alexander kind of follows in his mom's footsteps.
Okay.
Because Worf had the hardest time with Worf growing when he was first with his grandparents and when he was with him to get him to follow the way of the Klingon warrior. And he was more of he would be a great diplomat for the Klingon to the Federation. Because he understands Federation, and he also understands the Empire, but he just cherry-picking what he wants to do, and Worf's trying to lead him down the path of the warrior because he knows down the line that that's the way to handle everything.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, your turn, Doc.
So is this the last time we see this actor as Alexander? Or does this guy also appear in DS9?
Not the same person, if you mean the actor?
Yeah, the actor.
No,
as in,
this is it for him.
Yeah, because that's what I thought. I mean, in a way, I think that this is... I mean, rewatching this, it felt like they were trying to, like, wrap up the Alexander story, right? It seems like an auxiliary kind of like bolt on what we see in DS9, at least that's how kind of it comes across to me. But this episode's what? This episode's a perfectly pleasant. It almost feels like in DS9 in TNG at this point we're tying up loose ends, right? So we tied up Wesley last week. We're tying up Alexander this week. We're going to be tying up Ensign Ro in a few weeks' time. It feels like we're very much kind of like, getting into the tidy up phase and moving on to better things.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Me, I'm very brief. Honestly, I didn't remember much about this episode. I actually completely forgot the whole I'm Alexander thing about the time travel aspect. The only thing I, of course, pictured in my brain when I thought of this episode is, I don't want to be a warrior. So obviously that was in there. I don't know how much this helps Alexander change his mind about being a warrior, but seems like he certainly was happy about the idea for a brief time here. Does it help him actually go on to become a Klingon warrior?
Yes, actually it does in the DS9 episodes.
Right, that's what I mean.
Where he reappeared. But something that most people don't understand, when Worf was killed at the High Council meeting, okay, Worf was in charge of the House of Morg when he was in that position. Now, with the House of Morg merged with the House of,
Mok-Tok.
Yeah, with Morg merged with Mok-Tok, Worf may not have been at that council meeting to get assassinated. Him stepping in when he did changed the history in this timeline to where Alexander didn't have to go. Alexander, it may have changed his timeline to what we're seeing now. Does that make sense? Quantum physics is a very touchy subject when you're dealing with time travel, because it's, if you ever watched the Endgame from Avengers, and the Lady Wizard and the Hulk were talking about
Thunder has not yet
one that gems out and creates a divergent timeline.
The decision is mine.
Him interfering, coming back into time,
they rusted,
will now change the timeline from what might have happened in his timeline. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, what we're seeing is in DS9, obviously, Alexander did not become a warrior, did not want to take the right of, take his first right of ascension.
Mm-hmm. He had the ability to send me here to this time.
When he gets to DS9, he's a warrior. He's a member of the armed forces. He's on a military warship, so that means he's taken his first right of ascension somewhere along the line. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, he had to have eventually.
And now everything is going to turn out like it did before.
But the way this episode portrayed is that he would never take the right of ascension. He never did take the right of ascension. So he wasn't a warrior when his father's death happened.
Right.
Okay, but now he is a warrior, because we know this from DS9. Mm-hmm. This is what what Worf was trying to explain to the elder Alexander. Is by you coming back into time and doing this, you've already altered your timeline.
Yes. However, I'm going to give Captain Janeway a headache right now. There's always this problem in Star Trek with time travel going back to change things, because now that he has changed things and the future hasn't happened, there's no reason for him to go back in time and change things. The past is the future is the past. It all gives her a headache. But, I mean, he's now changed the history that caused him to go back in time in the first place, and now that's not going to happen. And if that doesn't happen, the timeline didn't change, and Worf will once again die. Doc, I'll be honest with you. We'll put Brian and my head together, and we're still not as smart as you are in this kind of field. What do you think?
Well, okay, so first of all, Janeway specifically mentions this, right, is it Time Again in Voyager, like the very second episode or something like that? I think Paris is talking to her and says, are we making sense? Because yeah. Paris basically mentions exactly what you just said, to which she says no. Now, the reason why she says no is that there's no answer to this. This is, this is contradictory. It's a logical contradiction. So you can either accept that you don't get time travel in your sci-fi, or you accept that you do, but you have to put up with these contradictions.
Or you learn quantum physics.
I don't think I can.
So, by the way, Lou, are you watching Picard at the moment?
I am watching Picard, and honestly, when you talked about it last time, what you told me was you're going to like it as it starts out. And I think you said as it goes on, it's starting to wither away, or I don't know what word you said, but...
Well, I see. So the words that I would use at the moment is fall out of the tree and hit every branch on the way down.
Yes.
Anyway, I wasn't going to make a comment on Picard other than to say that, look, you have the same exact situation in Picard. Right, you're going to go into the past in order to change something, but if that happens, then there's no need to go in the past.
Yes,
you always get these situations turned up.
Yeah,
you have to understand that when you, I guess the best way to explain it to you is when you go back into time to try to change something, you're not modifying the current timeline at that time. You're creating a new branch off of that timeline, and now that timeline basically now intersects and starts its route until it's like a river. Yeah. If you block a river and it creates a new stream to go where, because like linear time, it's like a river. It, when you block something, it goes and branches off and continues on from that branch. So what you've done is by Alexander going back in the time and doing this, we now have the timeline of him becoming a warrior down the line and earning respect within the Empire, okay? Because later on down the line in the books, Alexander is a very respected warrior in the Empire. And within House Mortar as well, and that in itself has modified or changed, because like I was explaining with the female wizard from Endgame and Hulk, he's plucked one of the gems out now that timeline is in effect. Alexander didn't... I'll wait till we're recording.
Yeah, he unrecorded, but I'm still going on mine, so...
Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, that's the easiest way to explain to somebody who doesn't understand quantum physics, how quantum physics works. Right. When you deviate something, creates a new stream, and that stream goes on and keeps flowing. And then... So... By Alexander going back, he has modified everything that he has experienced up to that point. So when he goes back in time, he could be experiencing the point where maybe his father didn't die. Or maybe he becomes the house leader and House Maul comes back and Worf's in charge of it and becomes something else or dies by some other means is what I'm trying to say. We don't know what that future change is yet, but he has broken the current timeline and Chris created a new branch, and that's what we're seeing now. See what I'm saying?
Yes. Okay, we do have to go on. We haven't even gotten into the meat of the show yet.
No, I know.
Okay, so as we start, time passes... A boy becomes a cat. No, wait. A cat becomes a war. No. I mean, to say the candle becomes a house fire. No, damn it. So, a boy becomes a warrior. Not so fast. Not so fast, Mr. Worf. Do you think Worf would really have been able to... I don't know. How do I ask this question? If Alexander just never became a warrior, could Worf accept that?
It would be hard for him, but yes. Okay. Because he realizes that he's got his mother's tenacity about doing things about him. And that drives him nuts.
But she was a warrior, I mean, it does. So if he was going to be like his mom, he'll end up being a warrior. And she was an honor.
She wasn't a warrior. That's the whole point of this. No, she was not.
Oh, she was the emissary. But still, she was pretty
She
funny.
Was not. She chose to train as a warrior, but she was not considered a warrior in the Empire.
Oh. So did she get an honorable death?
If you want to be killed by a traitor, an honorable death, then yeah.
Well, it was combat, I guess, suppose. So, yeah. So where is she? Is she in Stovacor? Or
that's a good question, and that's something that probably would come up in the Lou Trek show.
All right, guys. I just renewed the domain name Lou Trek Show for 2 more years, so we'll see. Okay. Worf is explaining the rituals of the Kortova, right? Kortova. Candlelight ritual to declare one's intention to be a Klingon warrior. He just overlooks one small detail. Alexander doesn't want to be a warrior. And that's the end of that as he walks out the door. So, Alexander, is Alexander the right age to do the ascension, rite of ascension?
Yes, he is.
How old is that? Because he's awfully small.
Remember, Klingon warriors are taught when men they can hold a knife in their hand, they're taught that they're already starting to be trained to be warriors. The difference is Alexander hasn't been in Klingon culture. He's been in Federation culture. So his training is way behind on this. That's part of the reason why he was such a good good shot with a blaster or a disruptor or phaser, but was never good at hand-to-hand combat.
Okay, so what would happen if Alexander was in school during a battle with the Romulan and his computer exploded in his face and he died? Where's he going? Since he hasn't done the Rite of Ascension, he doesn't want to be a warrior. Where does he go? Or do you want to discuss that on the Lou Trek Show, too?
That's another discussion on the movie. I'll have to bring a more... I'll have to bring someone much more detailed in Klingon religious followings for that one. I'll have to ask around at the Klingon Language Institute for someone for that show.
Okay then.
My assumption is that any honorable warrior who dies or any honorable Klingon who dies goes to Stovacor, but do not quote me on that. Because I am not for sure. I even have to ask that question.
Because, you know, I would say in our culture, okay, let's call it whatever you want to call it, heaven or hell is your two choices here in some of our religions. And I happen to think children are a different thing. Children dying should automatically go to the right place, Stovacor. Even if his young brain said, I don't want to be a warrior, but in Klingon... He held that batleth up like a champ, didn't he? So, because he can hold that knife and hold that batleth, he declared, I don't want to be a warrior. I don't know. I don't think he does go to Stovacor.
And that's an episode, and like I said, that's a Lou Trek episode, okay. And where I bring in someone a little bit more knowledgeable on civilian cultures and religion. For that, because that's a good question, and that's probably something we should be discussing.
Okay. So, James, you got anything, or should I go on?
No, carry on.
Okay, so what do you think of that water balloon that Alexander's friend hits Worf with? To me, it looked like a soccer ball, or as James would call it, a football. Didn't it? I mean, that was a rather sophisticated water balloon. It was like a water ball that just blew up on him.
Hey, I love the kids' imagination and intuition.
Sorry, I didn't mean to hit you.
Especially so bad that Klingon, how much Klingons hate water in the first place.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, so now, if Worf had gone out and just killed the kid for that attack, where would that kid go? And how much time would Worf spend on the brig?
if we would do this the way it should, the boy made the challenge and did his attack and it failed. Didn't kill, it didn't harm or do any damage to the Worf, but he has right of vengeance.
Okay, so on Kronos, or on a Klingon ship, you know, the captain's son threw that ball at him and he killed him. You know, the kid's 10 years old, 12
and
years old.
And the kid would go to Silver Corps because he fought an honorable battle.
He just lost to a superior opponent? Oh, God. Or better yet.
Now, Dad would not go to Silver Corps because he was fighting an inferior warrior.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah. No.
This is one of them episodes. It'll probably be three episodes long going through all this. That's why I want to bring somebody in with more knowledge than I have. And you know my knowledge base is pretty big.
Pretty big, yes. Because now I'm also wondering, what if Worf tried to kill the kid, but the kid killed him instead? Where does Worf go? Anyway.
Well, take this scenario. There was a three-book series where Klingons go back and look at the past, listen to their past history to understand who they are. One was for the DS9, one was for Voyager, and one was for Star Trek The Next Gen. Actually, four books, and then one was for Star Trek. And the episode that I'm referring to is when Kor and Kirk had to work together. Because another alien was killing off a Klingon agricultural planet that the Klingons had just beat the Federation on as a Vatanian. And Kor and Kirk, it's the Day of Remembrance, I think, is what they call it. But they were talking about how Kirk and Kor, through their disagreements aside, work as a team alongside a bunch of Klingon farmers. Now, do all those Klingon farmers who died go to Silver Corps? Yeah. Why? Even though they're not warriors, they fought and defended their camp and their crops, okay, and against this enemy. So, technically, they are warriors, even though they're farmers and they're civilians. They are still technically considered warriors if they're fighting to defend their people and their property and their crops.
Okay.
And the ones that died in the initial assault that weren't in the fight afterwards would all consider be going to Silver Corps because it was a blatant attack, a sneak attack. It'd be like the warriors who initially died when the Romulans did the sneak attack on Kedemar. Does that answer your question?
Maybe. Maybe we'll have to, like you said, we'll have to get more into that sometime. I don't know. Okay, so let's see. Worf. So Enterprise doesn't have much to do these days, you know, so Worf could do lots of upgrades to the ship, right? No, Picard says, Worf, why don't you take off to the Côte d'Ivoire celebration happening on Moranga 4? And he'll even, you know, drop him off one time. So the boy gets to watch reenactments of Molar's defeat by Kalis. It's an interesting thing watching that. And the reason why I say that is I would have expected a Klingon reenactment of a defeat by Kalis, that several warriors were going to die during this reenactment. Instead, it was a Klingon play that, to me, just seemed a little bizarre watching these. They don't even make contact with each other's batleth as they're just stopping, you know, mid-play. mid-strike. I'm shocked that the Klingon reenactment didn't involve some death. You know, I'll be Kalis, you'll be this guy. Honey, you're dead. Right? Nope.
You have to understand the Klingons. Believe it or not, Klingons love opera. Okay, Chang proved that point. Yeah. Okay, this is an example of a Klingon opera. Okay, now if you want to do what they did back on the Holosuites back on DS9, where they fought the battle itself in real life, okay, that's a completely different thing. That's a reenactment, like you would, for like the Civil War reenactments or the 1812 reenactments up here where I live at in Indiana. Okay, where they actually go out and shoot the muskets and everything, but no bullets in it, of course. But they already know who's going to be dead and who isn't going to be dead when they go out do the marching and the firing and everything. So, same thing with Klingons. I mean, they turn this episode of history in their history into an opera, and that's what we're seeing here.
Oh, anyway, the event was pretty good, and even Worf jumped in, and Worf was taken down by the guy, and so it was up to Alexander to do the rite of vengeance, which he does. So I do like the fact that Alexander jumped in, grabbed the batleth, but then I'm glad those aren't real knives, because it looked like the kid just went absolutely off on the guy. It was supposed to be a reenactment, because he even says, "You struck me." He looked surprised. So,
well, you gotta take it in mind too. They're used to getting scarred up and cut up and accidentally stabbed here and there. I mean, it's Klingon. It's Klingon life. Let's get real here for a minute.
For us, it's a day on the LA, you know, be like a day on the LAPD, you know. Hey, these things happen.
What about you, Doc? What do you think?
I'm sure he's never been stabbed, I hope.
I have not been stabbed. But no, I like this bit, you know. I think this is good insight into the Klingon culture. I like the way they portray it. I think that this is kind of pretty real. Right, pretty. It's true to what I would imagine the Klingons to be, which I feel sometimes they can be a bit over the top in how they're presented. And Lou, look, they're not going to kill people, right? No. so you know, I don't know how long a list of people you're going to get wishing to be the unfortunate soul.
Yeah.
And I like I like the way that Alexander does step up, and he does, you know, for a while you're beginning to think that Alexander is actually going to try to become a warrior, right? That he has decided to change.
Yep. Well, his Klingon nature came out.
Yeah.
Hey, Doc, did you ever notice the cuisine that they were serving at that festival?
Oh, I do not.
I didn't see. I know they were. Worf and Alexander were sharing something, but I really couldn't tell what it was.
Okay. Basically, it's the Klingon version of fish and chips.
Ah. Okay.
How it would be served in England. Rolled up in a cone, and the fish and the what we call fries, you call chips, are in the rolled up cone.
Okay, actually, I did not notice that.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Gok.
No, it wasn't Gok.
Oh, yes, it was. I'm watching Alexander eat it. It looks like gummy worms, which is probably what it was. But, yeah, I don't know if it may not be Gok, but it's something like that. I'm watching Alexander's hand's got a bunch of these little things in his hand, and they're, like, wiggling like Gok would. Of course, I hope they're alive.
You don't want to serve bad food on a festival.
Oh, heck no. But I wonder if they overcharge, you know, like festivals do.
But, yeah, if you serve bad food, you're liable not to be serving again anytime soon.
Yeah, it's no reenactment, you might get killed.
No. If you're going to get killed, you will be killed.
I do like the fact that the audience can choose to just step in and reenact it with them. That I do like. And, okay. So, in a interesting and typical, I'm not exactly sure I find this very honorable, but, you know, in incredible Klingon fashion, Worf and Alexander are jumped by three Klingons, but he's helped by Kumtar, a friend who says Kern sent him to protect him. So, what's this surprise sneak attack that Klingons like to do? Is that really honorable?
Not every Klingon is honorable, Lou.
Oh, that's right. Once in a while, you get a Duras here and there.
Speaking of which, this is why the Duras sisters got dragged into this episode.
Yeah. Well, I thought maybe we just needed one last look at those big, busty babes from the Duras family.
Hey, we get them again in Generations. That'd be silly.
Oh, that's true. They seem even bustier then, for some reason.
It's the movie budget, right? It's.
I think they also made it into an episode of DS9, too.
Yes, they did make it in DS9.
Yeah. Actually, hang on. But has that not gone already? That's gone already.
Yes, that's already in season 2.
And that's so why they... I mean, is this why they refer to it? Is this why Quark knows?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So they've actually typed in properly.
Right. But here's the thing. In this episode, when they say that Betor is with child... Okay, in other words, some guy knocked her up. Can you imagine what he looked like at the end of sex with Betor? But that's not a question I want you to answer, Brian.
I'd imagine.
You notice I'm keeping quiet on this one.
Yeah. But what I do want to know... If she is with child, we're at the end of season 7 and Generations comes very fast. Did she die pregnant? Or who did Lurser take her child in?
We'll never know.
Why we'll never know really sucks. I would have liked to know what exactly happened to to Betor's baby. Is he a Klingon warrior now? No, was the Duras family finally stripped of all their honor?
Well, they were stripped of all their honor when Gowron took the council seat after the insurrection fight.
Okay. So chances are if the baby survived, he's in a dishonorable house anyway.
Right.
Okay. James, I think I stepped on you a little bit, if you can remember what you were about to say.
Oh, no, nothing noteworthy.
Well, I know, but that's why we're here. Okay. Let's see. So the big busty babes of the Duras family are behind the attack on Worf. Which, you know, looks like Wrecker wants to go after them. Yeah. What do you think Wrecker wants with them?
Wrecker wouldn't last one night with them.
Oh, hell no.
He wouldn't last one night with the youngest of the two girls.
Yeah.
But I bet she gives him hell. It gives her hell in the process.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I don't seem to remember. There was a Oh no, it was Quark. Quark got a little feisty with what's her name? You know, the one he married briefly.
And still kept relationships with.
Yeah. I mean, when they ended up the infirmary. He was beaten to hell, wasn't he? But it was worth it. Okay, anyway.
So that's a whole nother episode in the future, brother.
Absolutely. We got a lot to talk about with Klingons. So it looks like Alexander... another Alexander, but we get there's a lot of people watching that event, by the way, and we get Admiral Jarok, the Romulan officer who tried to warn the Federation about Romulan incursions at Nelvana 3. He's there, Admiral Jarok. No, but actually, James Sloan is there. And what do you think about James' portrayal of Alexander?
Sorry, is that the guy? I had no idea.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, not only did I not notice it, but I don't even remember having this as memory, as in, like, as facts about TNG.
Fascinating. You see, whereas I have down here, James Sloan's style of acting is so exact every time you see him that it doesn't matter what character he's in or how much prosthetic they put on him, you know it's him. He talks the same. He acts the same. Everything he does is the same.
No, you are right. I do now notice this, but at the time I didn't.
All right. Yeah, right. So, Kemptar offers to help Worf teach Alexander how to be a warrior. Here's another temporal question. What if Kemptar was offering Alexander instructions on how to be a warrior and he accidentally kills him?
I would have to go to Taylor University and bring somebody up from the space program there who works with temporal quantum physics and have them come in for that episode. That would, because that one's going to be a very entertaining episode, to say the least.
Right. There's like a. Have you ever seen the movie? Frequency. With the Aurora Borealis and the two guys that talk to each other on the ham radio over 30 years apart. If you've never seen Frequency, you've got to see Frequency. And what happens is a guy in the past is fighting the father of the guy in the his son in the future is fighting the same guy, right? The same bad guys fighting the father in the past, the son in the future. When the father in the past cuts his face, the guy in the future, all of a sudden you see that line just being created on his face as it happened. It happened 30 years ago, but there he is. Now, I hope you're mute for that. So in the future, it would be really funny if he was trying to teach him how to be a warrior and he accidentally nicked him, and all of a sudden you see that mark on his chin where the scar would be.
Okay, so what I worry about that is that in Trek, they really do not... They very, very, very rarely respect causality of people's actions in the past. In fact, the only one I can think of is... and with Picard, right? This is kind of slightly more in the forefront of my mind. Do you remember the episode in DS9 when they go back to the Bell riots?
Right.
And then obviously it becomes Sisko, right? Mm-hmm. That ends up in the front of the history. Well, in Little Green Men, the Ferengis, Rom, Quark, and Nog, they all go back to Earth. And they're looking at the history book, and they find it's Captain Sisko's picture.
Yeah.
And at that point, at that point you have some kind of causality. At that point, you realize that actually they did change the events properly.
Right, and I can't imagine that history would have wended its way forward exactly the same to where, Sisko would have landed on the space station, all of their history would have been exactly the same, unless Sisko was always Gabriel Bell in the past. It just took the Ferengi to go back into the past and see him. So obviously, Quark, Rom, and Nog end up in a period after Gabriel Bell, because then that's the only way they could see his picture, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, here's another throw in on this, since you're throwing all this in. Data, Ted, in the Presidio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But they said nobody has been in there for however many hundreds of years and since it happened, or however many years it was. Nobody, we know that nobody's been in there. How do they know that? But they don't. It's just a throwaway line. Now, we know for a fact nobody's been in here to disturb this. So how did this happen? Yeah, I get that. So maybe they always went back in time to stop the Davidians. Or whatever those aliens were. Yeah, it's been a while since we did that one. Okay.
But by the way, I'm getting major Time's Arrow flashbacks with the current season of Picard. It feels very much like that. I mean, the fact that Guinan's there, the fact that they're, you know, they're kind of like out of time. I'm just thinking, oh, this is just a very, very long episode of Time's Arrow.
Yes. However, it's not Whoopi Goldberg. Now, I haven't seen, I think I'm still on number 7, and I think they've just done number 8.
Yeah, they have. Yep.
So I think I still need to see 8. Don't tell me if Whoopi shows up in there or not. But I thought when we were going to see Guinan, that we were going to see Whoopi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know why, because she was, unless they couldn't get Whoopi on. I guess she would look rather old now today.
But I mean, Pete Goldberg was in the, what was in at the beginning of the season.
Say that again.
Whoopi was in at the beginning of the season. She cameoed.
Yes.
At the beginning, right in the future.
Right. But why wouldn't she have been able to go and be here for the past? If she was in San Francisco in the 1800s. Then she would have been around in 2026, or was it 2024, whatever it is, to be at 10 forward. Why did it have to be a new actress?
I think that they're just pragmatically doing it because either the schedule or the time commitment or whatever, it's just probably too much.
Or Whoopi's crazy political views.
Oh, yeah, she's insane now. But, you know, I mean, as long as she makes good Trek, I don't have a dog in that political fight, so I don't care. As long as she makes good Trek, that's all that matters. So, let's call DS9 to find out what's going on. And who's answering the phones these days? Quark. Now, hold on. Okay, so Quark answers the phone. Is he in the commander's office? And if so, what's with the security guard standing right behind him?
Actually, I don't know about the security guard. I thought he was in his quarters. So it seemed weird that he was in his quarters and there was a security guard.
So wait a second. I get it. Okay. Because Riker owes, Quark owes Riker some latinum, he's calling Riker directly. But what is the woman behind him doing? Maybe it's his, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. I mean, she was a scrawny little human, wasn't she?
I don't remember.
Who knows with Quark?
Yeah, can you imagine Quark? Yeah. Okay.
Quark is the equivalent of Riker. He sleeps with everything.
Right. So, yeah, Quark says that the Busty Twins were there to buy some second mining equipment. Second-handed mining equipment to go magnesite hunting. He really does know how to lie, doesn't he?
Well, when you're bred to lie, it just comes natural.
I suppose so. Okay, so anyway, Kemta takes Worf and Alexander to the holodeck to teach the boy how to fight. And when it comes time to make the kill, he just can't do it. I just can't do it. I mean, it wasn't real. I'm curious why Alexander couldn't follow through. I suppose he's just too young. Real or not, having to kill someone, that might be a little difficult for a little lad like him.
But, I mean, is it reasonable to expect a child that size to be, to be pulling the trigger, to be, you know, to be actually killing something?
Yeah, I think that's wrong.
If the child was growing up in a Klingon society, it wouldn't have bugged him one bit, but he's been grown, raised in a Federation society, and there's where you have, that's why Alexander has trouble pulling the, as they say, pulling the trigger to finish the job. Right. Okay. Plus, when you grab your son and bring him in where his mother's been beaten and killed and show it to him, that's also kind of embedded into him too, keep in mind.
But what about the kid playing Alexander, Brian Boswell, which, hell, something must have screwed him up because he is one... He's had some bad times growing up. He's in a lot of trouble, that boy. Or that man.
Now. So when you say boy, he's probably like 45, right?
Yes, I don't know, something. But I don't know about that, but... Yeah, no, he's a bad guy.
Yes, be older than... Okay, let me... What's his name?
Brian Boswell. B-O-I... I don't know how to spell. Let me see here.
I've got it.
Oh, good.
No, I don't. That's all. Don't worry.
I got him on memory alpha.
Hey, there he is.
December 3rd, 1981.
Okay, yeah, so he's 40.
Yeah. Have you seen his latest pictures?
Well, no.
Yeah, he definitely did not take the path of acting.
The warrior?
Exactly. Yeah, more like the, yeah, terrible, terrible. I even remember he was on a movie that my daughter loved that I thought was kind of cute too called Blank Check. He finds a blank check and makes it out for $1 million, and next thing you know, he's got $1 million and he's living the life of luxury. That's stupid. It's a kid's show.
Well, but, in fairness, that is still criminal.
Well, it is still criminal, but what are you going to do? And Doc, you've got kids. They might like Blank Check. So that gives you an excuse to watch it and say I was right. It was stupid, but it was cute. But here's the thing about... Alexander didn't want to make the kill shot, but what was the deal with the Klingon warrior coming up from behind him, about ready to stab him in the back? That must have been a Duras hologram, don't you think? Yes. That was programmed by Duras.
Well, it's not... So it was a Klingon, right? A Klingon hologram?
Yes.
So they program a Klingon hologram to act dishonorably? Yes. Sounds a bit suspicious.
Well, that's the thing. That would assume that Kentar...
You always assume that there's always someone behind you as a warrior. You can't never let your guard down.
Which he wouldn't.
Alexander let his guard down.
That's true.
Remember, you guys have to think like Klingons. You have to understand, battle to them is constant. You can't let your guard down, because if you do, Assassin's Blade's going to be in your back, or Barry, yeah, he's going to flip you around and put it in your gut, and you're going to bleed out. I mean, it's just the way it is as a warrior.
Okay. Oh, I tell you, this is why I hate recording shows 2 weeks after I wrote my notes, because I'm having trouble remembering parts of this episode. Like, they arrive to a planet to find that there's scarring on it, but no machines are in use, so a top-rated away team beams down to find an alien who thinks he can make a deal. Even though he got stranded by the Duras busty twins.
Yeah, so we're still on the hunt for the Duras sisters.
Yes.
And the... Okay, maybe I just missed this when this scene happened, but it seemed like out of nowhere. And I think that if there's one like criticism I have of this episode, is that when they get going on this like goose chase, they like it seems to me at least that they press the fast forward button a couple of times. So we land on the planet, and then you just walk in on a guy just sitting there. Now I remember I had the same criticism in Tin Man. When the guy goes with the with the spaceship, and he's supposed to be there forever, right? What is this guy's toilet facilities? It doesn't look like there are any. It doesn't look like had the Enterprise not come along when they did, this guy would have starved to death,
yeah.
Unless I'm missing something. So it always feels slightly convenient that they find him. It's also slightly convenient that they find the Duras sisters, like. Pretty quickly, right? And also, I think the final kind of fast forward happens right at the end with to me, it feels like the kind of the reveal of the guy from the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a blink or you miss it kind of moment, right? It's not as if it's like they dedicate like a significant amount of the episode to this. This comes and goes very, very quickly.
Yeah. They tend to do that a lot, too, where they have such a long build-up. And then, once the real thing is revealed, they wrap it up and end it. It's another one of that does it.
And actually, this alien, doesn't he have, like, pretty good and pretty unique makeup on? I mean, this guy would have had to have sat for 6-7 hours to get this stuff on. And to think that it almost could have been, they almost could have replaced this entire scene with like, we're picking up a signal, right? That's what they needed to say to cut this entire thing. But instead, this guy's been paid, he's sat through makeup, and it's a big long day at the office.
Yeah, I could imagine. Yeah, but they left him. Those honorable Duras babes. You know, Brian, I don't know if I've ever asked you this question, but okay, so we have Worf, son of Mog, I'm sorry. Then we have Martok, who takes in Worf, so that obviously puts Worf now in the house of Martok. But is that like Mog, Worf, and Alexander Jones? Because why do they call them the Duras sisters unless their last name is Duras? But do Klingons have last names? I'm not thinking they do.
Well, their last names is their house name.
Okay, so why ain't they? Okay, so why ain't they in the house of whoever Duras's father was?
They are. Duras was the last. The Duras sisters. We'll use the House of Duras because that's the last house they were in.
Okay. So Duras' father was Joe, it would be the House of Joe, but Joe's gone. Duras is now the man in charge of the house, so it's the House of Duras.
Terrell is in charge of the house, so it's... And Terrell has kept the Duras' last name.
Well, Terrell was also... dishonored as well.
Right. The whole House of Duras is dishonored.
Yeah, going all the way back to Kittimer.
Okay. Yep. So that means Duras's father, Duras, and his son would all be dishonored. So it would be the great grandson who would have honor. So in this case, Duras' father, the eldest daughter, her son would be dishonored.
Does your personal code
now, that child has a kid, then that kid would have honor again.
Ah. Okay.
You have a point.
You're stranded on a planet. Well, anyway, so let's get back
to this. Back to regeneration.
How many? I thought it was like more than three generations.
No, three generations.
Is it three? Okay. I gotcha. Okay, let's go back to this alien. He's pretty, he's got some guts, doesn't he? They're trying to find the Duras sisters. He's like, yeah.
You have a point.
Really not one to share information, but I'll make a trade with you. To which is answered with, oh, I don't know, how about you get off this planet, or we'll just leave you here and go on our merry way. Well, doesn't his house of cards fold rather quickly? You might be right. So, but then again, is the information he's giving any good?
We could certainly provide passage off this planet in exchange
for find out towards later in the episode.
Fail to tell the Packlids that we were mining their ore?
So, as long as you don't tell the Packlids what we're doing, I'm sure we can come to an agreement. The Packlids. The Packlids. So, do you think Packlids are smart enough to investigate what he's done? That's a different story.
That's another story for another time.
Yeah, the Packlids. They're so fun. So the Enterprise arrives at Kala 3 and finds the freighter that contains the Magnesite. But not much of it. So Riker, he agrees to buy it. Now, what do you think Riker had to give that they were interested in? I'll buy it from you. Okay, no problem. So he takes it, beams it into space, and blows it up, revealing... Dun-dun-dun. The Klingon. The Klingons, those silly girls. What will they ever learn?
They're Klingons, they never learn.
Yeah. But Riker does get them to beam over to discuss the attempt on Worf's life, and they, of course, deny it. I think Worf, you know, said something in Klingon at them. I'm sure it's probably like, go to Stovakor, and I don't know. But then we find out Lursar is with Child. What is the deal with this knife that one of the assassins was using against Worf? Which is
okay. Each house, every house has what they call a house dagger. Okay, like my own personal house has a dagger that basically the hilt on it has the markings of the children and the people of that house. Okay, my original house was Majh Beek before I became Makara. And my dagger would have my father's mark, and then would have my mark, and then would have my two daughters' marks. And then now that dagger would have six more marks for my daughter because I have grandchild number six coming.
Wow, I have grandchild. I have what I call him Gam Child because I'm Gampa, and my wife is Gamma, not Grandma, Grandpa. I'm Gampa, Gamma, and he's our Gam Child.
Seven kids in 6 years.
Second month of life. You gotta hear this. I'm gonna divert just a second because I love this part. This little boy, this 2 month in. 18-day-old, is on my chest. He's rolling over onto his side. Now, I'm fat, so yeah, that's going to happen. But he can roll over to his front when he's on me. I put him on his back, rolls over to the front, rolls over to his back. He tries to walk on me. Now, he's obviously at the age that if I put any significant weight on his legs, it would probably snap. But he does try to walk. He is putting one foot out in front of the other. He does it. His foot is still caved in because he doesn't have structure yet. The other day, we were laying there, and I could have sworn he said hi. So I said, hi. and we just went back and forth. Hi! I swear he's saying hi. And then he got his hands on his bottle as I was giving it to him, and I kind of let go, and he actually held it. 2 months, 18 days old, he's holding his own bottle. Now, of course, it started to dip down, but still, I'm thinking, oh my God, this is so cool.
What? Your daughter's had a baby already?
Yeah, don't get me started. Yeah, she's 20 years old. Anyway, I'm going to stop at that one because there's too much involved. You want? We could talk offline about my daughter, the boyfriend, the baby, but she lives with us, so we take care of him.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry I didn't tell you. But yeah, I got it all on Facebook. There's a whole thing, an album to Gam's son. And so I started when he was like just a few weeks old, and I'm going to start doing videos and pictures along the way, which, damn it, if we had Facebook when Alexa was a baby, she could look ahead, look back on all these things, but we didn't. We had digital cameras. We didn't have Facebook. And anyway, that's a different story. But he's going to look back on this day, and the reason why I really want to do it is I'm 53. Nobody has ever went past 69. So, in theory, I've got less than 16 years left, which means I'm never going to see him graduate high school, be married, college or whatever, in theory. And since I'm fat and stupid, chances are I may not make it to 69. But I want him to look back on his life as a baby with me and Gamma. And I think it's so cute. And that's why we're doing that. But anyway, I'm sorry about the tangent. But six? What are their ages range from
high seven to? Seven to be born in July.
Wow. And now how many, remind me, you've had, I know Heidi. Is Heidi the only kid you had?
No, I have a stepdaughter, Sarah.
Okay, I don't remember Sarah. I just remember Heidi. And so, how many did Heidi have?
All six.
Oh, brother. Seven to...
Six good thing. Kids in 7 years. She had twins in that mess.
I was going to say, boy, it's a good thing he at least let her heal before starting on the next one.
That's a long discussion off track, so we need to keep going and stay on track.
Definitely. So, okay, so now I get that knife thing. That's the reason why she kept pointing at that, saying, this is, yeah, it would be where her child is. So, boom.
Yeah, when she saw that dagger, you could tell right off the first bat, both of them were like, where'd you get this at? Because nobody knows she's pregnant. Only those two know she's pregnant.
Not even the doctor?
Well... I'm saying the people in the room.
I know. But that's another question. How do they find out? Like, in the past, humans injected bunny rabbits with the hormones of females, and if the bunny died, she was pregnant. So what did Klingons use? What dies to show that you're pregnant?
Targs. What else?
My Targ died. Okay. Yeah, that is so funny.
My Targ died an honorable death to tell you that I'm pregnant.
Yeah, yes, because that's what I always hear. I heard that when, we first got married, Hey, has a rabbit died? What? I never heard of that. I had no idea humans used rabbits. And if the rabbit died, you were pregnant. How screwed up is that? But different story again.
Or wise tales.
Yes, yes. Oh, I don't know if it is wife's tale. Warrior's tale. So Worf walks in on Kemptar, who's about to use a disruptor on Alexander. So, yeah, I had actually forgotten that part when I said, what if he was trying to teach him how to be a warrior and he accidentally killed him? Well, he's trying to kill him for real. And until Worf stops him, and that's when you get this moment. I'm Alexander! Anyway, I gotta stop that, because I can't do that voice very good. From 40 years in the future, you know, kind of like Luke saying to Darth Vader, "You are my father," I think. But we're not going to talk about that stuff here, are we?
Hey, I didn't bring it up. You did.
I know. So why was he doing this? He came back to kill the younger Alexander?
No, he came back to change the future. Right. So his only logic at that point was, if I kill myself, then I killed the timeline and my father lives.
Yep. There we go. So you answered the question. We didn't need anybody on for that, did we? Star Trek and time travel is so fun. But yeah, if he was thinking, then yeah, if he's not going to be a warrior, I don't want to live like this. The whole thing is set in motion again. It's going to happen again, so therefore just kill him and be done with it. So then, Kemptar never would have existed as Kemptar. Where do they both go? Alexander goes to Stovakor. His older self goes to Greythor.
Yep. Talk about a paradox.
Yeah, who's who? Yeah, don't get the wrong one. All right, so.
Yeah, I kill myself to go to Stovakor.
Yeah. But, you know, Worf tells him, you just have to allow things to go on as they were meant to be. And besides, now that I know about it, I'll change it. Oh, I won't let them. Yeah, the problem is now he's going to be so alert to dying someday, he's going to miss something that happens somewhere else. He could die today, he could die tomorrow. You just never know. And this is the part of the episode that just kills me, because we could have had so much more. What would have happened if he had actually told Alexander, "I'm you"? Remember Time Cop? Same matter can't occupy the same space at the same time.
Who knows? He would have been a warrior sooner. But here again, what we talked about. Because he has come into the past, we know Alexander now becomes a warrior.
Yep.
Okay. Where if he hadn't came in the past, Alexander probably would have been the diplomat and the non-warrior. And what happened to Worf might have continued on. See what I'm saying? By him jumping in and doing everything, and Worf knowing what Worf knows now, okay, you've already changed the timeline. You polluted it.
Right.
You've modified it. So everything after that episode, things could have been completely different.
Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, he probably didn't tell Alexander anything about it.
He probably didn't, if I know Worf.
Nope. He'll keep it to himself, but he'll be on the lookout.
Mm-hmm.
So James, I think we're at the end, so you've been quiet, because we're talking over you, but if you've got anything you want to toss in that I may have forgotten or something.
No. I think I'm good. I think it's odd that... So this episode kind of relies on Worf kind of accepting this guy into his life. Both after the attack, he seems to be very trusting. And then also when he kind of claims that, hey, by the way, I'm your son. Again, relatively trusting. He seems to accept it relatively quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I mean, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe just Worf is... a better person than I am.
I would have had Dr. Crusher do some comparisons.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about that.
I mean, they did nothing on this. They didn't say how he got back in time. They're not saying anything about where he goes from here. Where does old Alexander go? You're muted.
No, I don't.
Brian, you're muted. I see you talking. There you go.
They did say how he got there, but they didn't say how he got back.
How did he get there?
He bribed a person who could do time travel.
Oh, nice. Well, then I imagine he would have bribed his way back. But then if he bribed his way back, does he all of a sudden become a whole different person when he gets there? Because Alexander is changing his ways? Or this
we'll never We don't know, because they never did anything to, after that point, to tell us what happened.
Right.
All we can do is speculate at this point.
All right, then. Well, guys, I do have to be going, so I think we should wrap it up. So this is going to bring us to our final thoughts and ratings on this episode. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Kapla Klingon, tell us.
Well, this is going to be one of them rare occasions, because you know me, I always give Klingon episodes a good high rating. But this time I'm giving it a 3. And part of it is because the way the storyline petered out at the end. But it was really good at showing the cultural aspects of the Klingon Empire. And it also showed some of the mindset of how Klingons are. So I give it a 3.
Okay. For me, I'll just go next. This one kind of is puzzling in a way. Alexander comes back in time. No mention, you know, of what happens to the guy after he's gone. Then maybe he just finds a job somewhere on Kronos. Goes by Kemptar and goes back to whatever he was doing before today. He staged the assassination attempt against Worf to scare Alexander. So, there's another question I didn't get answered. These guys that jumped Worf, did they die? Didn't they die?
I think they did.
So, again, they would have had to say, hey, you just go scare him, don't hurt him. But then, they end up dying in the end, so that's not good.
Well, I think he actually used Duras flunkies for this.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. So the older Alexander reveals himself in the last 5 minutes of the episode. All it took was him telling Worf that he was told the boy the way Kemptar proved it to Worf was by saying what Kalar told him as a child when she was murdered. And Worf just accepted it. So I guess, how could anybody have known what was said? How did Alexander remember all that was said watching his mother die? Anyway, the whole episode has just so much build-up. So little action, in a sense. It left me with too many questions. And sometimes Klingon episodes can be complex. They require a second episode to get the answers and, you know, for honor to be satisfied. But this just leaves me too confused with Bator is with child. Okay, fine. The only reason they mention that is because it's on a knife. But what happens to, Bator's child? Does she die with her or stuff in the future? Whatever. The Klingon event where no one dies is kind of funny to me. I always thought, you know, you die with honor in doing this reenactment. Yeah, you're going to die, but you're going to die with honor. And I'm surprised that Klingons wouldn't be the type to actually volunteer for that, because if you don't, that sounds dishonorable for Kalas, especially when we're dealing with Kalas. So I would have thought, hey, Klingons are going to want to die to reenact the Kalas battle. Anyway, it's okay. I think I'm pretty much done. But yeah, you're right, Brian. I gave this one a 3 as well. I could have given the Duras sister cleavage a little bit more, but no, I'm not going to. They do a better job of the reveal in DS9 and Generation, so I'll just let it go. So I'm at a 3. So, Dr. Roberts, how's about you?
Oh, actually, I'm really surprised here because I'm coming in at the same level. I'm coming in at the 3 out of 5. I mean, I think that this is, you know, I don't think this is a great episode. I think it's a, you know, it's a relatively pedestrian episode. I think it, as I mentioned, I think it does kind of fast forward things a little bit too much for my liking at the end. But in terms of where we are in the series and what we need to do basically to, you know, say goodbye to all of the characters that have been part of the show for the last 7 years, I think it's necessary for us to do something with Alexander, and I thought that this was a perfectly reasonable send-off for Alexander. And, you know, it's not even that it's just Alexander, right? We have learning points for Worf. Worf comes across as a very reasonable father at the end of this. So, yeah, I mean, you know, middle of the road TNG episode for me.
Okay. All right. That's good for all of us. So,
okay. Basically, it was a good filler.
Yeah. All right, Brian. I thank you for coming on.
It was an honor, my friend.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you know, TNG took us so long to do. I'm so embarrassed by that, to be honest with you. But
don't worry about it. I've been quite busy. As like I said, I got a grandkid on the way, and
yeah.
Number six. I can tell you one other thing. The Klingon has a mate.
Wait a minute. I didn't know that you didn't have a mate.
I didn't have a mate.
She... Oh God, it has been so long. I can't even think of her name anymore.
Clara.
Yeah.
I moved out of Clara's years ago.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. You know, maybe someday we just need to talk.
Yeah, whenever you get free time of not doiling over your granddaughter.
Grandson. Gamson.
Grandson. Yeah, grandson.
you're right. Really, it's so funny since he lives with us. I when she was pregnant, I'm like, look, no, I don't want another generation in the house. I don't want to raise him because I'm not so sure she can, and I know he won't. So what are we going to do if we have to take care of him? I'm living here. We're going to have to take care of him. I honestly wouldn't have it any other way. I love having him here. I love playing with him. I love the fact that, I think I cut myself off where he, you know, he's starting to walk. And so I put him on me, and he actually puts one foot out in front of the other. He's walking. Holds his own bottle, talks, hi. I'm trying to get mama, but that one's very difficult to do. So, yeah, I'm having a lot of fun. So the cliche that goes, if I knew grandchildren were so much fun, we would have had them first, is so true. It is so.
I wouldn't know. I don't see my grandchildren anymore, so.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I hope that changes. But
well, that's a discussion where you and I can sit down and just put Skype on and sit down and catch up on everything.
Yes, we will. We should. Yeah. But, okay. Anyway. Yeah, once in a while, my daughter looks at me when she sees me playing with him. Like, she's jealous in a way. And I'm like, you know, believe it or not, this is exactly how I was with you. Your head was constantly wet from kisses. I played with you so much. I talked to you so much. I put you on me to try and get you to walk and sit up and talk and all these things. So don't be jealous of what I'm doing with him, because I did it all with you. So, anyway. All right. Can't wait till James gets his first grandchild.
What?
Where did that come from? Yeah, I know. It's 8. You know, you got to experience it. It's fun. So.
Anyway. Ain't life until you have your first grandkid, Bubba. Trust me.
Exactly. So
take your time.
Well, of course he's going to take his time. He has no say in the matter.
Yeah, it's not really up to me, is it?
No, it isn't. How old's your oldest, James?
18.
18? Is he a... Is your first one a boy?
A girl.
Huh?
A girl.
A girl. Okay. A girl. Because, yeah, there's one kid that was wearing glasses that looked almost like you. I think some pictures I've seen on your wife's Facebook page. Oh, he hates it when I talk about his wife's Facebook page. He gets jealous. I don't know why.
Hey, if his oldest is 18, give him 5. He'll be joining the grandfather.
Well, I hope the kid will wait 5 more and not have one at 20. You know, 20 unmarried and ill-prepared. Please don't ever want that on your child, man.
Oh, don't even... like I said, that's another discussion.
Exactly. It's a touchy one here. Yeah, it's cost us a lot of money, but it's like, what am I going to say? I'm not going to feed the baby. I'm not going to buy diapers. Yeah. She knew she had us by the cojones. So, anyway. All right, everyone. Thank
Hang
you,
on. Brian. Join us again next week, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot to say that. So join us again next week as we review episode 22, and that is Bloodlines. And we're slated to have Chris Johnson on for that. We were to have Colin, but I'm sorry. He isn't going to be with us. So, Chris, if you're listening, and I know you're not because it's going to be recorded before you hear this, we'll talk to you next week. Brian, thank you very much, my friend.
It was an honor to come back and talk to my old black market buddy of mine and the doctor.